The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today, our guest is Jill Vaughn. Jill served as the Assistant Administrator for the Transportation Security Administration's Office of Security Capabilities and the Chief Technology Officer since December 2014. But Jill just recently left TSA in December and now is a Senior Advisor for Global Security and Innovative Strategies, or GIIS, and also a partner of Jill Vaughn and Associates. Jill graduated from Virginia Tech with a bachelor's degree in business. Jill, first, let me thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jill, let's begin with your background. Virtually all successful women we speak to had a big influence growing up. What was your biggest influence?
I would say probably my parents. My grew up in a very federal family, so to speak. My grandfather, my father, my brother, we're all in the Secret Service, and I was just very motivated. Also by my mom, she was in the school system, so I had a really strong family influence growing up and just really good role models, and that's really what I think drove me to, you know, become the person I am today.
Did they encourage you to pursue a certain career?
You know what? They were just very supportive of whatever we decided we wanted to do as kids. I think you know, them, my father, my grandfather, my brother being in the government, I think I always felt a drive towards supporting public service and mission was very important to me. So I spent a few years in the private sector after college. And then after 9/11, that was really a turning point in my life where I decided I was really called to do something bigger. And that's what drove me to become part of the TSA.
It's funny, Jill. I'm going to ask in a minute about your undergraduate degree, but you mentioned 9/11, and so many of the women that we talk to, for them, that was really kind of the catalyst, the pivotal point that made them decide that they wanted a career in government. Do you, as somebody who now has been in government for many years and just left, do you worry about how the government is going to continue to recruit the best and brightest unless, you know, we have another event, and hopefully we never do, like 9/11.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a concern. It's a valid concern. I've worked with some amazing women of all generations, and that, you know, in TSA, I think really attracted a broad spectrum of generations, which was wonderful because we got to work with lots of different folks. But I do think that, you know, as the younger generations have so much more technology and they're driven by different things probably than I was, maybe, I do think there's going to be, you know, a more concerted effort to try and grab those, that younger generation of women, especially in the STEM field.
So let's go back to what I was going to ask you about, which was your degree from Virginia Tech. You decided to major in business. Now, Virginia Tech is a great school, probably better known even for their engineering and some of their STEM degrees. What drove you to major in business?
The school, you know, when I went down to visit, I fell in love with the whole school. I didn't think I was capable, or it wasn't in my bailiwick to go the engineering route, which is what a lot of folks go to school there for. I love communications, and I minored in communications. Business just seemed like a great overall fit for me and my personality, because I think you can do lots of different things with it, and you can take it in lots of different directions. So that particular school in Virginia Tech just really spoke to me, and I thought I could do a lot with it. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do when I went to school, but by the time I left, I felt like I had found my niche, and I really loved it there.
Today, we're speaking with Jill Vaughn, former TSA CTO and current senior advisor, GIIS, and partner Jill Vaughn and Associates. Jill, well, let's go back, and you had said that before you joined TSA, you were in the private sector. So tell us about your very first job.
My very first job out of college, I was blessed to be recruited and hired by a company called Nortel Networks right out of school. And that was such an amazing process to go through the interview process and get selected for that job. I learned a tremendous amount at being at Nortel Networks, not so much about what I was the actual job itself, just more about how corporate and how, you know, what that looks like when you have your first real job and you're earning a real income right out of school. So the people there were wonderful. The team of people, I still remember the people that I worked with. And it was just a really great experience to learn the ropes and get your feet under you with a group of supportive people. My boss was very supportive and they really took me under their wing right out of college and helped me just grow as a person working in corporate.
That was a kind of a turbulent time for the technical industry and for the telco industry. I mean, you couldn't pick a more, if you were to put a pinpoint on the timeline, that was a very, I would say, turbulent and fast time in those industries. What was it like being a young woman in a job like that at that time?
Right. Looking back, you're exactly right. There were layoffs happening, you know, companies were shrinking, growing, popping up. It was a very interesting time. And now looking back, I don't know. I always looked at that, you know, as that industry is, I was just like, well, if something happens, I'll move on to the next thing. I didn't really give it a lot of thought. I just kind of took it as let's ride the wave and see what happens. And let's, you know, I've just moved from one different thing to the next, hoping that I would sort of something would click for me. When I was in the telecommunications industry, you know, it was during a very turbulent period of time, but I also think that helped me grow as a person because I was watching some very interesting things take place, and there were lots of cuts happening, lots of layoffs happening, and the industry was just in such a state of turmoil that I think it helped me grow again as a person.
So we have a lot of listeners out there that might feel like these days seem a little bit turbulent, a lot of change going on. A lot of young people looking for jobs out there. What advice would you have for them if they're facing some of the same challenges that you faced back then?
I always look at change as opportunity. You know, I've gone through a million changes, both right out of school and when I was with TSA. Very turbulent times across the board for lots of different reasons. And I always looked at as change as opportunity and an opportunity to grow and look for your next step. I've never been a person to say change is a bad thing or get down in the dumps because something didn't go exactly the way I thought it was going to go. So change for me has always brought me opportunity. And I think if you go into it with the right attitude, then you're going to come out a much better person and a much better employee or a leader for it.
So speaking of change, after Nortel, you went on to work for Sprint, also a company that was going through a lot of change. So tell us a little bit about your role at Sprint.
So at Sprint, again, I had a great team. It seems so long ago when I'm looking back at that period of time. Again, great, great company, great job. But I felt like it, again, just sort of a growing experience for me. I never felt like I really got to dig my heels in and move to the next level, which is why I eventually ended up at WorldCom for a little bit, and then I eventually ended up at TSA. So again, I would consider my private sector experience in the very beginning, those first 4 to 5 years of my career, as just I learned more not about products and services so much as I did about me becoming maybe the person that I am today from a leadership perspective.
We're speaking with Jill Vaughn, former CTO of TSA. Coming up, you'll hear what motivated Jill to go into the public sector. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today we're talking with Jill Vaughn, former TSA CTO and current Senior Advisor, Global Security and Innovative Strategies, and also current partner of Jill Vaughn and Associates.
So Jill, we were just talking in the previous segment about your early, early career right out of school where you were working for the telco industry, and you worked at several different large telcos, right, for Nortel and Sprint and WorldCom. And then 9/11 happened, and you took a job in the recently formed TSA. So tell us about that whole experience and how you decided to leave the telecommunications industry and go into government.
So when 9/11 happened, I was actually in my honeymoon over in Italy when the news came about the World Trade Center. As I'd mentioned previously, my brother is a Secret Service agent now. He was actually stationed at that point in time. He was stationed in the New York field office. So his office was directly across the street from the two World Trade Centers. He was in a tower across the street. So when I was in Italy, I was waiting with my husband for news. It felt like it was hours before we were able to locate him, find him, and, you know, validate that everything was okay. Thankfully, the word came that everything was good. But that was really a turning point. That whole experience, starting on my honeymoon, I think I always had the innate thought that I would move into the government. It just was sort of a calling for me to do something and support kind of something bigger than myself. I was very driven by that. So as soon as that happened, I think a light switch just went on and I sort of kicked everything into high gear to move my career in that direction. It seemed like there was nothing else. That was the answer. Luckily, you know, TSA was not luckily, but TSA was forming at that time. And luckily, I put my name in the hat and joined. When I joined, it was genuinely like a new company was forming. People were extremely passionate because of the tragic events of 9/11, and people were very motivated to make something happen. And people were pulled together. People were coming in from all different parts of, you know, with different backgrounds and different histories. And it was just an amazing environment to be a part of. Every day was a long day, sometimes sleeping there, sometimes, you know, working until, you know, who knows what time of night. But everybody did it with such a positive spirit because they were so motivated to be helpful and to respond to what had happened. So when I joined, I didn't really know what my job was going to be. And that kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier. I think there was so much change. They were just looking for people to jump in and make things happen and do whatever needed to happen. So titles and all that stuff was still being formulated. And so I think for me, I very quickly grew up and I very quickly kind of jumped in, and that's what really led me kind of indirectly into the cybersecurity industry. I learned cybersecurity really there, and I grew up there, and I worked my way sort of all the way up to becoming the chief information security officer there. But it was that sheer necessity and just pitching in and learning the ropes and being very, I would say, leaning forward and driven that kind of got me to where I am today.
So when you first applied for jobs, did you have in your mind that you wanted to work for TSA, or you just knew that you wanted to go to the government and that was an agency that happened to have an opening?
I knew I wanted to work for TSA. I absolutely knew I wanted to work for TSA. I remember meeting with what was became my first boss in the cafeteria for my interview, because the office spaces were still even being formulated, and just having a very brief conversation with him. Again, not really understanding what exactly I was going to be doing, but just knowing after speaking with him that this was the place that I needed to be based on what they were trying to accomplish from a mission perspective.
You know, when you talk about that time, you talk about it with such passion that it just brings us right back there to those days. And I'm struck by the fact that you talk about the fact that everybody was so dedicated to the mission and realized how important it was, that jobs didn't matter, titles didn't matter. Sometimes you were there, you know, 24 hours. Do you think that today within agencies like TSA, people are still as connected to the mission, and is there still that same drive? Because, you know, frankly, government sometimes gets a bad rap for being overly bureaucratic and maybe not as focused on the urgency. So how did you see that evolve over time?
I mean, you know, like I mentioned, it was like a new company when we started, and it absolutely has matured over time for so many different reasons. The people, the culture, the policies, the whole thing, I mean, the governance structure. I mean, everything has matured significantly over time. I will say the passion within a lot of the employees is still very evident. And it was in everything I did. I tried to bring everything back to why were we evaluating a particular technology and what was the impact of that. I tried to send my people out into the airport so they could get a field experience to draw them closer to understanding what they were doing and who it was going to be supporting. So I made it a part of my mission every day to have them connect to the mission every day. I think as you draw farther away, though, from an event, I think it becomes more difficult to stay as connected as it was in those very early days, just because it was so raw and so fresh. But I do think the people that are there that have been there, especially for a long time, are very passionate about mission. It's wonderful.
Now, Jill, you stayed there a long time. You stayed 14 years after that. It was majority of your career, and certainly your entire career in the government. So tell me about that first boss. Clearly, he must have been a great leader, very inspirational.
He was. He was, and he's still there. He still is there. But he was wonderful. He was just great attitude. Gave me a lot of rope, so to speak, a lot of flexibility to own and create my own little segment of the world. He just probably out of necessity because of the, you know, we had resource issues and there was so much work to get done. But he really gave me the freedom to go and do and put trust in me and just gave me a lot of backing and instilled that, I don't know, that trait in me or just gave me the ability or showed me what it looked like to be, I think, be a good leader. Because he was just so trusting and empowering. He really empowered the people that were working for him.
Today we're talking with Jill Vaughn, former TSA CTO and current senior advisor to GSIS and partner at Jill Vaughn and Associates. So Jill, you talk about growing, and you did grow significantly in your career. You went from a business major from telco, jumped into government, and then somehow ended up as the CISO and ultimately the CTO. So just tell us a little bit about how your career took that trajectory and ended up in really two really technical roles.
Yes, I would say I had some really amazing mentors, leaders, and I'm always a very sort of conservative person when it comes to I can get sort of in a comfortable space and I'm feeling really happy about where things are. They kind of didn't allow me to stay there. They said, if you're too comfortable, then you need to move. So every time I was starting to get comfortable, I started to get that push. And they pushed me into some really uncomfortable places that, looking back, I'm so grateful for that super big push, because I think I would have sort of just, you know, kind of been very happy, but just kind of stayed where I was, doing a great job. And I think those extra pushes from people that have taken the time to look out for me have been amazing. And that's really what I think led me into these, along many other things. But I had a boss that used to say, you know, going to the next step is based on three things: timing, luck, and performance. And I really remember that, and I think about that all the time.
So you are one of a number of women CIOs and CTOs in the federal government. The percentages actually are much higher within the federal government than they are in private industry of women in those C-level roles, technical roles. It's such an accomplishment. But one of the things that we have noticed recently is that many women like yourself, Dawn Leaf, Laverne Council, and others are leaving the government. Some were political appointees, some not political. So is that a trend? How are you looking at that situation?
So I think just for me personally, it more had to do with some of the family stuff that I have going on. I've got two little kids, and I have dedicated the last, you know, 15 plus years to the government. And I, to be honest, I was just ready for a change. I actually felt like I needed to make myself uncomfortable again in order to grow further. I also felt like I had an amazing run at TSA, and I was ready to sort of get a little bit of flexibility back to be with my kids a little bit more than I was. So that was really what it was for me. I could absolutely see myself going back at a later point in my career to the federal government because I love my time there. I don't know if I can speak to the rest of the trend. I would say I think there are a ton of amazing women in government, and I think women are very supportive of each other, which I think is a great thing. But that was really what it was for me.
We're speaking with Jill Vaughn, former CTO of TSA and senior advisor for GSIS. Coming up, we'll hear about some of the mentors in Jill's career and women that she's had an opportunity to mentor. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, we're talking with Jill Vaughn, former TSA CTO and current advisor of GSIS and current partner of Jill Vaughn and Associates.
So, Jill, we mentioned mentorship in the last segment, and you talked about how mentors have helped you. What is the most memorable advice that you've ever been given by a mentor?
I think the most memorable advice is to not try to map out a specific course for yourself. I think when I look back, I kind of didn't have a straight line. I didn't have a plan of becoming the CISO or the deputy CIO or the CTO. It just sort of happened. And so I think just letting things happen organically and doing a great job, hoping people will notice and putting in 110% and not getting so caught up in titles and you know, importance levels, that was wonderful advice, because I think if you kind of let all that go, then good things will just happen to good people. So that was some great advice I received fairly early on in my career.
You know, I will say there's a little bit about of two schools of thought with that, because that absolutely resonates with me and was very much how I approached my career, thanks to some good mentorship. But I also read and hear a lot about the fact that women tend to fall into this trap where they put their head down and do a good job and hope that somebody will notice. And you just kind of used exactly those words. And often in doing that, they don't get the promotions. I mean, the data shows that, right, they don't get the promotions starting from the very first promotion at the same rate that men do, who tend to be more assertive in the way that they look for opportunities within an organization. Did you experience any of that in your career? What do you think about that?
Well, I totally understand what you're saying. So when I say do a good job and hope people will notice, you also have to be aggressive, and you have to go after what you want. If you think that you're hoping that you're going to get a promotion because you've done a good job. I had a ton of people that would come meet with me and say, I don't understand why I didn't get this job, or what do you think happened? And we would go over the history of the, you know, what happened. And I'm like, well, you got to put yourself out there. I mean, you can't just expect a promotion because you've done a great job. You have to actively pursue those opportunities and put your name in the hat. Even if you don't get that first job, you got to go back again and try again. So I think it's doing a good job, but I also think you have to own your own career, and you have to really think through it. So I just meant I didn't have a specific title in mind. I always wanted to move to something and make a difference. I didn't know exactly what that was going to look like, but I think people have to actively own their own career. No one is going to take care of yourself but you.
So let's turn that question around about mentoring. Have you had an opportunity to mentor any other women or anybody? I mean, have you had a chance to have, you said you've sat down and talked with people, so I'm assuming you were mentoring them.
Yes, absolutely. And I actually established a mentoring program within my office. And I had people not only that, you know, reported to me, but people that were requesting to come just talk with me about different things. So I think mentoring is wonderful, and I think it can be formal or it can be very informal. I've had the opportunity to mentor lots of women as well as men that are looking to do different things with their career. And those have just been some amazing conversations. Again, not only for me to help them, but I've actually learned a lot through those sessions when I'm mentoring other people. Just about what their perspective is of how the organization's running, or even things that it teaches me things that I could have done better as a leader. So I think mentoring is a wonderful thing. And I think it can come in all different shapes and sizes. So people should just think of mentoring as having amazing dialogue, or it can be very structured in nature. So whatever you get out of something like that, I think if you have the opportunity to mentor or be mentored, it's a wonderful exchange.
So sometimes people have a hard time finding a mentor or really connecting and getting something out from a from that relationship. So what advice would you give to somebody looking to have a mentor?
So I would say if you're looking for a mentor, then go to somebody that you think is a wonderful role model in your organization. Doesn't have to be somebody you report to. It could be somebody in a different part of the organization that you just think kind of has what it takes. You could either ask that person or you could ask that person to help you find someone. Typically, when I would go through that process, I would ask kind of what are you hoping to work on or what do you want to get out of it? And then I would try to pair them up with somebody that I think would be a great fit. If they're looking to learn how to be a better communicator, then I would go to somebody that I thought I was still learning from in the organization. If they're looking to learn more of the business side of things, then I would go in a different direction. So sometimes it was even external to my government organization, just people on the outside or even within a different government organization. So I think just taking that first step and actively going to somebody that you think will help you pair you up with somebody, usually people are really willing to jump in and help somebody out. You just got to raise your hand and let them know you need some help.
You know, what? One of the things you said earlier I thought was really great advice. You said take it in any shape or form that you can get it. So a lot of times people think mentoring is, you know, this big formal process and big time frame. And when you're going to get advice from somebody who's extremely busy, sometimes you need to like size it down, right?
Yes. Get,
did you do that?
Absolutely. And this is going to sound funny, but mentoring to me was, or just becoming, is just was watching people. I mean, even in meetings, I would watch the people I thought could diffuse conflict wonderfully, and I would try to work on that. So I think mentoring can be, again, it can be very structured, but it can also be just being an active participant in things that you're not even sure maybe why you're in a specific environment or you're in a specific meeting. But I took every single opportunity to try to learn from people that I thought had the traits that I was excited about.
Today, we're talking with Jill Vaughn, former TSA CTO and current senior advisor, GSIS, and partner, Jill Vaughn and Associates. So, Jill, earlier when Aileen asked you a question about your proudest accomplishment or most memorable accomplishment at TSA, you talked about your people and all the people that you had had, teams you had had a chance to lead. You are very, very clearly a people person. You can tell that from every answer that you give. But let me ask, how would you describe your leadership style or philosophy?
I would say I'm very collaborative. I always told my folks, I love to hear bad news because then we can do something about it. So I tried to make it a very collaborative, kind of forward-leaning approach so that people could feel empowered to go out and do what they needed to get done. I mean, a leader is just one person. I mean, you need everybody moving and rowing in the same direction in order to have a successful organization. So I would say, I always wanted the people to know that I was there to help take care of them. So I did lots of things to try to open up dialogue. I'm a huge communicator, so sharing of information was very important to me. I always told my staff, there's nothing I know that you shouldn't know. So I think communication, collaboration, not only with my team, but my peers. I think setting a good example as a leader is very important because I think the tone of the organization takes on whatever the style of that particular leader is. And if they see the leader being collaborative and working with others well, then they usually want to take on that same spirit. So I think just leading by example and trying to set a good tone. But I'm also very direct in what I'm looking for and what direction the organization should be moving in and the things people should be focusing on. So there was no ambiguity, I would say, in hoping and where I thought we should be, what we should be doing as an organization.
You know, I think that you bring up a great point. Sometimes it is hard to thread that needle where you are being collaborative and you're creating an atmosphere where people feel like they can speak their mind and can bring you the problems as opposed to sweep them under the rug. But at the same time, be decisive, be a strong leader, be, to your point, direct and clear. And I have found in my life that women tend to struggle, I think, with that even more than men. Did it take you a while to find your sea legs
Yes.
as a leader?
Yes, it did. I think whether people get a certain title or they're a woman and they're moving into a title, I think some people think overnight you need to become like this different person and you need to show that you're the person with the title. So I went through a little bit of a struggle there trying to find that wonderful balance between you know, having people, wanting people to respect me and the position that I was in, and, you know, balancing everything else out. That's what led me to, you know, respect and is earned. And just because you have a title doesn't necessarily mean people are going to respect you. So there was definitely a journey there of finding my sea legs and getting some good balance.
Jill, if there's a listener out there that would like to one day be a CISO or a CTO of a department like TSA, let's start at the very beginning. What would you tell them to study?
Well, if you want to go in the cybersecurity field, there's so many wonderful things happening in cyber. It's such an amazing space to be in, and technology is as well. And those things to me are very intertwined, obviously. So I would say search out. When I was working my way up, I got my certifications. I got my CISSP. I studied really hard for that test. Just figure out and absorb how much you can learn, and figure out what field of cyber might be interesting to you, as an example, and then figure out how you can work your way, you know, into the other fields of cyber. There's lots of different domains you can focus on. I think it just depends on what your passion is. Find out what your passion is, and then just attack it, and figure out how to make yourself and grow in that particular space, and then hopefully just the rest will naturally come. But seek out opportunity and seek out ways to improve yourself. And even if it doesn't seem like it's something that's specifically something you're supposed to do, if somebody makes a recommendation and maybe it's not clear to you why you should do it anyway, because you'll end up learning something from that experience.
So, cyber is such a huge field right now. And all of a sudden we went from not being able to find any employees in cyber to actually it's easier to find a cyber engineer than a data scientist these days.
Right.
We need both, by the way. But so what part of the government would you recommend if somebody has done these things and is ready to start looking for a job in the government and getting this wealth of experience that can happen? How would you start? Where would you start? What agency?
So, again, I think maybe think about what mission speaks to you as a starting point, because it really all ties back to mission, no matter what you're doing for an organization. Homeland Security spoke to me. Homeland Security is a wonderful place, and there's lots of opportunities for cyber, both at the department level, NPPD, or any of the operational components, as an example. But every government organization has a cyber program. If you're really serious about cyber, then again, find a mission that speaks to you and figure out, you know, maybe what you want to do with cyber and where might be a great fit for you.
So 5 years from now, and you've just come from one of the hottest agencies doing one of the biggest jobs, what do you predict will be the greatest demand in 5 years from now? If your child was starting college today, what would you tell them to study?
Wow. So the things that I'm seeing is around, I would say, you know, cyber, I think, is still going to stay hot. I think different elements of cyber are going to become probably hotter than others. I think areas of data analytics, machine learning, those are really hot areas that I think have a lot of growth to go in terms of fields of study. So those are ones that are on my radar and I think are continuing to have a significant amount of maturity left to go.
You know, machine learning, you bring it up, and I brought up data science before, and watching the trend, you know, there's certain peaks when technology comes in where you can see big change. You know, I'll use one that everybody can relate to, you know, cell phones. Mm-hmm. Cell phones changed our lives, right? You know, you're reachable everywhere, every place. But machine learning changes the way we leverage computers, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Instead of telling them what to do, you teach it how to learn what
right.
to do. And it's going to touch every part of our lives.
It's amazing. And I was just starting to dabble into that on some of the technologies that we were looking at and trying to think differently about how the officers were utilizing pieces of equipment and where I could start to infuse different types of technology to make their job easier, actually. So I just think there's a lot of growth. That's a very exciting place to be right now.
We're speaking with Jill Vaughn, former CTO of TSA and current senior advisor GSIS. Coming up, we'll find out what Jill likes to do when she's not working. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Today we're talking with Jill Vaughn, former TSA CTO and current senior advisor, GSIS, and partner at Jill Vaughn and Associates.
So Jill, we've talked a lot about your career and what you different roles you've had while you're working. What is it that you like to do when you're not working? I know that you just recently left the government. You've got two little kids. I'm sure they take up a lot of your time. But do you have any hobbies or special interests?
Well, I'll be honest. I haven't been on a good workout schedule while I was at TSA, probably because I didn't have time between that and the kids. So I'm getting back into trying to exercise more and do things like that, which I think just has helped my mind clear up. So that's been amazing. I feel healthier. And there's nothing better to me than to read a good book. So any spare moment of time that I have, I think in my secret life, I would be a writer or just a professional reader. But I love to read. And of course, most of my time is spent doing something with the kids. Anytime the weather's nice, we're outside playing or doing something. So those are my hobbies, really.
And of course, you're really just probably starting to get into the really busy years with your kid. Well, all the years are busy, but in different ways. But I think you mentioned that they were 6 and 7
yes.
years old. And so the point where they start to play soccer and
yes,
you know,
all
scouts
here.
And all of those things is all starting. So, enjoy the free time while you can. So,
exactly.
So, Jill, you had such a successful career. With all the competing priorities in our lives, women often have to make hard choices. Sometimes those decisions may even delay or dampen the success or send you in a different direction. Did you face any of those hard choices, and how did you evaluate them?
I absolutely did. Every single time there was a turn in the road in my career, my first thought and my first conversation was just around how that was going to impact kind of the work-life balance situation. And I always had that conversation with whoever I was going to be working for, because my innate thing is to say, I'm going to give 180% to whatever I'm doing. But I was pregnant twice while I was at TSA. And so every single time that something was happening, I would absolutely go in and have that conversation about just managing expectations and trying to make sure we were on the same page. But I worked really hard, but I also don't feel like I had to sacrifice getting to spend time with my kids. And I think you have to make those decisions on a case-by-case basis based on where you are in your life and what works for you and your family.
You know, I think that's a parent obstacle. But, you know, Gigi and I both have 4 kids each, by the way. And we've shared stories before where, you know, I always get asked how I do it. How did I do it? And I think I never heard a man being asked the same question.
Right.
So do you think that created, you know, some obstacles for you or discrimination because you were open and how did you deal with that?
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, because when I would have conversations with women, like a mentoring conversation, that is the number one question I got is how did you do this? Or I'm scared to do this because I'm not sure how I'm going to balance it. So I think that's a common fear for a lot of women. It is interesting. You don't hear really a man being asked how you're going to handle it when they get. But I think for women, it's the first thing that usually pops into your mind if you have children or you're thinking about having children. I don't know. I just tried to, every single woman that I talked to, I said, you will work it out and you will make those decisions as they come. But don't count yourself out because you're anticipating the negative that can come. Just take it on a case by case basis and make whatever decision you feel like is the best one.
That's great advice, because, you know, I actually hate the term, you know, life balance, because it's not about balance. It's about making decisions and setting priorities.
Right.
And so, you know, I think sometimes that creates a guilt factor
yes.
in trying to find that balance. No, you have choices to make. And it sounds like you actively involve both your employer and probably your family at the same time, too, and help the choices.
Definitely. And I also think it's great for people to see that leaders are human and have families. And, you know, they're going to become, I think, more impassioned by what they see. So if you're setting a good example and letting them know it's okay to have a family and you can balance it and you can do it, I think it makes your people stronger. It makes you stronger. It makes it a stronger organization. People want to work harder for people that they think are a little more humanistic in nature.
You know, I think that's a great point. We all talk about wanting more diversity in organizations. Maybe the answer is we should start asking the guys how they plan to balance it all and make it all work
exactly.
too. Having said that, are there some specific strategies that you can recall that you used to, you know, we've heard all kinds of just good tips and tricks from different guests that helped them make sure that they were prioritizing what they wanted to prioritize at any given time. Did you have any sort of lessons learned that you can share?
Well, I will say I hung a note my daughter wrote to me when she was like 4 or 5. And it just said, "Mommy, I miss you and I want you to come home." And so I hung that next to my computer. So every time I was teetering on a decision to stay extra X hours at work that day, I would look at the letter and ask if it was really worth it. Or one of the tricks I always told my staff is, listen, you can, when I go home, I'll go home at the normal time so I can spend time with my family. And then they'd say, yeah, and then we start to see you at like 8:15. You're like back working again. I said, yeah, after I put the kids to bed, I was cranking it out again. So I think you can have creative ways. It doesn't mean you physically have to be in the office to be productive. One of my tricks was basically working after the kids would go to bed, especially when they were younger, so that I could be there, you know, for dinner and make sure that I was home. And a lot of stuff I would tell people, there's very few things that can't wait until later in the evening or till the next day to get done.
And sometimes I think that things actually do better if you've given them a little time to think about it. You know, we all in this 24/7, you know, in all information all the time on your cell phones and texts and everything, we've gotten so used to having to have immediate responses and immediate reactions. And sometimes a little thought time can actually help you come to a better solution. Did you ever experience that?
Absolutely. And I always took into context, again, the expectation of leadership. Or I think part of it is prioritizing the sensitivity of the situation. So I think I became very good at boxing things into specific buckets. This can wait till tomorrow. This actually really is time sensitive and we need to get something out right away. So I think that should be part of the strategy as well, is understanding, you know, and prioritizing how things need to be responded to. And on the way to work every morning, I had a pretty long commute. That's what I would do every morning, is I would sort of frame out mentally my day, knowing it was going to change 100 times. But people used to laugh at me because I was working on the elevator. And I said, I got more done on the elevator than I did at the meeting. So I think it's just those types of things, is make the most of every single moment and figure out a really good way to work your time.
So I'm going to fast forward it for a moment. And your daughter, you brought up, you have a daughter. Mm-hmm. And what advice would you give her at the time in her career, like when you were just starting TSA? What 3 pieces of advice you'd give her to help her find that self-satisfaction you have found in your life and your career?
I would say work really hard, go after what you want, and trust your instinct. I think deep down, people know what direction that they should be going in. So whatever's speaking to you, no matter what the outside noise is saying, speak from within you and know that'll tell you, it'll give you your gut to tell you which is what the right direction for you is. You'll know, it'll feel like a good decision.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, we've been talking with Jill Vaughn, former TSA CTO and current senior advisor, GSIS, and partner in Jill Vaughn and Associates. Jill, I want to thank you for sharing your journey and advice with us today. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.